Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. I was just saying off mic that you would think this guy's 100 years old from the resume that he's put together. It is unbelievable. If you take a look at his IMDb, he's got to be the hardest working guy out there. He's one of the funniest guys out there, one of the most talented people that you're ever going to come across. Drew Droege is our very special guest. He's an actor.
Hi, comedian. Frank.
How are you, Drew?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. And you must hear this a lot. You're one of the hardest working guys out there. Does it feel like work?
I like to be busy, and I always like to mix it up and do a lot of different things. So sometimes, I mean, I'm not going to lie, sometimes it does feel like work, but I'd rather be doing this kind of work than anything else. And I love it. I do love what I do. So feel lucky.
Yeah. Well, when was the first time you got any work? I mean, were you like a child actor, or did it come a little
later? I started doing work in my community theater in Lincolnton, North Carolina. It was just that shy kid that just did that, like, sort of wasn't shy when I was on stage. It was the, you know, opposite from most people. I got really involved right away, and I had to, you know, and I tried to do every play that I could immediately. And, you know, and this was when I was trying to balance schoolwork and all of that. And, you know, and it was just, nobody tells you that when you're in, you know, in a small town in North Carolina, that you can actually do this for a living. And so it was just always something I just thought I would do on the sides. And I went to college at Wake Forest, which is also a liberal arts school in North Carolina. And again, didn't expect, you know, to do this professionally. I just kept doing theater and ended up majoring in that. And then when I moved out to Los Angeles 20 years ago, I just started taking improv classes at the Groundlings because I just kind of kept going. And once I moved out here and saw that there were all different kinds of, jobs to be had, and they're all different, you know, not everybody has to be, you know, either Tom Cruise or a failure, you know, you can kind of, exist in between those two things. And I just kind of have sort of, you know, kept doing it. And, it's obviously up and down, and it's hard sometimes. And it's also, sometimes it's a, you know, wealth of, you know, having to decide between jobs or, you know, so, the more people that, you know, you sort of meet along the way and then sort of build up trust from people to get, you know, when they ask you to do things, you know, you turn around and say, oh, look, I'm doing this with my life, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned Tom Cruise, and, you know, there are others, you know, that elite few that got landed a big role early on, and then they just kind of put on roller skates and Cruise,
right.
Picking this. To be honest with you, it's so much more interesting to me, and I think to a lot of listeners, to talk to somebody who grinds it out or has to figure out a way to get from role to role in,
sure,
in different ways. It's, you know, Tom Cruise, what are you going to say? How did you decide on which major role to
right, to right, exactly.
You know, I mean.
Well,
and
I think I think for a lot of people, you know, I mean, I think still it's like they think that if you're, when you say you're an actor, that your goal is to be Tom Cruise, is like, and they kind of look at you like, oh, when are you going to make it? Or like, when are you going to have that sort of a lifestyle where you live in a castle and you don't, you know, go to the grocery store without getting mobbed? And it's like, that sounds terrible to me. And it's like, you know, I love being, you know, in the world and sort of, you know, part of it. And it's, yes, it is a lot more interesting. Also, it makes you create your own material. I mean, it's like, I mean, I feel lucky that I wasn't handed so much when I moved out here, that I wasn't immediately thrown onto a TV show or given, you know, a huge film career, because it made me create. It made me sort of figure out who I am and write the best roles for myself. And then friends started writing work for me to do, and you start collaborating on that level, which is so much more exciting to me than just being sort of stuck, in some ivory tower somewhere and being untouchable. That seems weird.
Let me remind folks that are just tuning in a little late, or maybe just turning on their radios a little late. Frank McKay here with Drew Droege, and he's just a wonderful example of what one can do if they have passion and talent, kind of put it together. And wow, I mean, it is an impressive career that this man has put together. It's unbelievable. I don't even know where to start. I mean, usually, you know, you say, oh, you know this guy from The Office, or you know this guy from the, you know, Ed Asner show, or, you know, or something. Right. I mean, it's just a pile of wonderful work, and it's all, I mean, it's good quality work, and I'm sure there's things that are on there that you're like, oh, okay, I had to do that one, or that was a paycheck, yeah, or that was for the wardrobe, or whatever. But it's, sure, I don't even know where to start. It's really an incredible career, and you're one of those guys who is hard to define. Let me ask you this: growing up in the business, when you decided, hey, look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this professionally. Who was the first person you ran into that was doing it professionally?
Oh, well, the first thing that pops in my mind, when I first moved out here, my roommate's father is friends with Kevin Costner. And right away, we went to a premiere of a film of For Love of the Game. This is a film that Kevin Costner was in 20 years ago. And we went, and I was so confident and had no idea how the business worked, that I went right up to him and I was like, hi, I'm an actor and I'd like to work. Like, I mean, and somehow I met his agent at the party, and she was so nice to me because she took my phone call the next day, talked to me for about an hour on the phone, and basically was like, I will not represent you. This is not how this is going to go, but here's some advice. And she basically was like, get in school, just start making things, and then just start, you know, making friends. And she's like, work really hard, get really good at what you do, and don't be rude, don't be a monster, and you know, and essentially that's what she told me. But I think back on that and think about, like, how many people would just never take my call or respond to me, or like give me that much time and advice, and or say, yeah, sure, we'll represent you, and then just never send you out. And so It was also a great lesson. And God, I would never be that bold now, you know, to go up to a movie star and be like, hi, I'm an actor, and I'm ready for work. I moved to town. But, you know, I was sort of, you know, Heather Graham and Bowfinger, just sort of getting off the bus, like, where do the actors go? You know, because I didn't know better. And so my ignorance, like, you know, helped me in that way. And I realized then, it's like, oh, yeah, no, this is a long road, and it's not about, you know, immediately just like signing up where all the movie stars are going. It's like, you know, get in line.
I mean, but that's the other part of it. The fact that you went up there, and maybe it was the naivete it's the feeling, fearlessness. And sometimes you see that in baseball. I don't know if you're a baseball fan, but you see a kid come up from AA and he just doesn't know how big a situation is, and they hand him a ball, sure, and he goes there, and instead of thinking at it or overthinking, goes and he's just himself, and he goes out there and he pitches a gem, and you know, it's when they start thinking about it, you know.
Absolutely.
How about you? How long did it take before you started thinking, I shouldn't do things like that?
Well, it's when I a lot of it was that when I would see other people do it, and I was like, oh God, that's so, you know, that's so gross. Don't do that. Don't ask someone for a job, you know, and don't assume that because someone has any level of success that they're even able to help you out. It's like, you know, I used to, you know, I think there's this sort of belief that like people are holding jobs from each other. And the reality is, it's like everyone's just trying to, you know, get their own work. And, you know, people are happy to help you out when it's easy for them, when it's convenient. I really do think that, because it's like, obviously they're like, sure, I'm happy to, you know, connect you with so-and-so, but, you know, you can't like just sort of go up and assume like, hey, you're in a bunch of things, or, you know, you're an agent or whoever you are, help me, hook me up. It's like, that's not what they're, even if they wanted to do, wanted to help you, sometimes they can't do that. So I had to sort of learn that way. And then I was paying attention to a lot of, you know, when I started going through the Groundlings comedy theater in LA, I started to sort of watch how certain people's careers were happening, or I would hear their stories. And it all really basically came from them doing really good work and having people recognize it and seeing them and then asking them to be a part of something. And then it that felt a lot more tangible to me than just sort of this magical thing about, like, you know, just hang out at Schwab's and maybe you'll get noticed, or you know, just like go to the right parties and meet the right people. I mean, I learned early on, like, you know, parties are not the place that you want to be asking, you know, people for work or trying to actively trying to network. It's gross. And it's like, people just want to be people at a party. You know, they don't want to talk business unless someone comes up to you, like, just don't, you know. But then I've sort of had to learn, it's this ever, you know, swinging pendulum, because I've also, there are times that I've been too sheepish, or I've been so like, oh, I don't want to go up and talk to so-and-so, I don't want to bother so-and-so. And sometimes it's worth, you know, just sort of, you know, remembering your worth and sort of, you know, and going up and, you know, making a connection and saying hi to someone, or you know, or when you hear about a job coming up now, it's like, it's a different sort of equation, because when you have a body of work underneath you, you can kind of, you know, say sometimes like, hey, what about me for this? You know, occasionally that,
yeah,
can happen, you know.
It, well, listen, you're hearing the voice of Drew Droege, a guy who's put together an unbelievable career. It really is. It's something to be looked at it and just kind of shake your head like, wow. And I it doesn't seem like there's a lazy bone in his body, but then again,
there's so many, I promise.
Drew Droege is our very special guest, actor and comedian and writer and content creator. How about that? Frank McKay here with Drew Droege. You know, there's a story that I always remember my aunt telling me, and she was an actress in The Panic in Needle Park, which was Al Pacino's disturbing role before.
Oh, absolutely.
And she told me,
Kenny Wynn?
She looks like Kenny Wynn, but she played Penny. She played Penny in there, and she was one of the drug addicts, you know. And,
oh, great! Yeah. Oh, cool.
But she told me about Pacino, and she said that you know, because I always thought he was like so introverted, and you know, mm-hmm. you always hear this. She said no. She said he was the opposite. He was, you know, he was the star of the show, so he had some confidence there. But he was like picking everybody's brain, and he was interviewing everybody almost, and he was saying, "What are you doing next? Oh, how did you get that? Who casted that? Oh, who was even the?" She said, "Even the caterers, he was asking and plugging them for information. Like, you know, like how did you get this? Who did you?" And they announced at the cast party that he got the role as Michael in The Godfather.
Godfather.
You know, that's
sure.
where they that's where they announced it, was at the cast party.
Wow.
Yeah, and they were all blown away because they were thinking, hey, this movie might last, but. She said that there were some people who thought he was such like a pain in the ass, you know, like, you know, just drilling them for information. And I was amazed that she said that. And, you know, I asked somebody else on that cast, too, and they're like, yeah, no, Al was like that. So, you know, I guess it's different when you're the star of the film
rather
than doing that. But let me ask you this. You get so much work. And I think it was Chris Rock who had a line that he said, there's no such thing as a bad job if it leads to another job. And I'm paraphrasing that. But how much of that comes from the amount of work that you're doing? How much work do you bump into because you're doing other work?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. Well, first of all, I always, for me, just personally and psychically, if I'm working on something, I'm not panicking about not working on something else. So it calms me down in a way that I'm not kind of, you know, like, you know, in a constant, like, what's going on with my career. So that helps just me on a personal level. But when you're busy and when you're doing, I do a lot of live theater in LA, a lot of comedy shows, and just you stay in front of people's eyes, and then they, you know, they might come and see the show, but I think more importantly, they just see that you're working. And you know, you create that, you know, that sort of the idea that you're not sitting around twiddling your thumbs waiting for the phone to ring. And, you know, people like to, you know, cast people who are busy. They, you know, and you know, and you're, you know, so for me, I don't get sluggish. If I go too long without doing anything, I make it all too important. And like you were saying, in the baseball analogy, I'll overthink it. If I go a month without working and I show up on something, I kind of am like, oh, what am I doing? I feel, you know, just like I haven't worked out in a month. And so, and I make it really important, and I could, you know, you can biff it sometimes, or you feel like you're not really doing your best work, or you're not the most relaxed, but if I'm doing, you know, three things that week and I pop over, I'm like, oh, I feel so loose and relaxed. And people can tell that. I mean, people want someone who is relaxed, and a lot of the work that I do with comedy, like you've got to show up like able to improvise or roll with it, or the script's changed, or you just got to kind of be in the spirit of like, let's play, let's see where we're going. And so that all helps. The more I do it, the more it helps, for sure.
Is there anything that you missed out on because you were working or you assigned to do something else, and then because of that you just didn't get this line of work? I'm sure it happens, but is there anything notable?
Oh, I'm sure. A lot of times there are a lot of things that we don't always know about, because, like, you know, if you're busy on something, you kind of, you know, then a lot of times they don't even get to you to know, like, you know, because, like, you know. And so I try to always ask my agent manager to tell me, even when I can't do something, because I like to sort of know. And there's really not anything major. I mean, there are plenty of things that I've auditioned for and not gotten, but I don't know that there's anything major that I haven't been able to do because of something else. I mean, you know, I've been very lucky that things have worked out kind of miraculously time-wise. I've been able to sort of slide certain things in. And definitely, I swear, taking improv classes really helped me just sort of relax in that, when it's just sort of like, you never know what's going to come next. Just be ready for what comes your way, you know, and trust that, you know, things will work out. If it's meant to be, your job, you're going to do the job. If it's not meant to be your job, you can work so hard and try to get into all those rooms and it's just not going to happen. So I've learned that as well. I've learned too, like, not to push too hard for something, because it's like, you know, it's also at this point, it's like, for a lot of things, it's like people know. It's like, if you know, if this is what you want, then give me a call. If not, I'm not going to push my way in the door and, you know, demand that you see me.
Drew Droege is the voice that you're hearing. Frank McKay here with a very talented guy, and he is putting together a wonderful career. And talent goes a long way, but there's also work involved there. Drew Droege, once again, a comedian and just a wonderful actor. Drew Droege is our very special guest. Let me ask you about Drunk History. I saw you on Drunk History, and I said to a friend of mine that was watching, and I said, you know, and I've seen some of your other work, and I've seen your online stuff. I said, if this guy eventually is going to have like a crowning achievement, you know, in other words, like this big role that you know him from, that you know Drew Droege from. And when they do, they're going to look at the rest of the work and they're going to say, you got to be kidding. Where the hell did this? You know, they're going to look expecting to see that there's, you know, 50 things. And you look young. You know, you've been at it. You mentioned 20 years. But you look like a young guy. So the thing is, people are going to be blown away. Do you ever think that there's something out there that's going to come up, that's just going to explode, and you're going to have no idea what it is when it comes to you?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've been, and I feel like I'm on a long list of people who, you know, who could, and I talk to a lot of actors, this, you know, who are in this place who, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you feel like a lot of times you're one big job away from that happening, and you don't know what that job's going to be. When I go home and see my family, Drunk History is absolutely the thing that everyone that I, you know, will, you know,
you were great.
From
you were
home, everyone's terrific. Like, oh my God, you were on Drunk History. I mean, so that's one of those things that will be hard to top for a lot of people. And I love that I've gotten to be a part of that show a handful of times. And then, yeah, you don't know. I mean, I did a sitcom 2 years ago, and I was on every episode of that, and we thought that was going to take off. And it was the reboot of Heathers, the film,
yeah,
the TV show, you know, and it was just so controversial. They announced that it was going to premiere, like, I think three different times it got canceled, it got pulled, and it was like on and off and on and off. So that was an incredible creative experience. I got to work with like some of my favorite people as who were writers and other cast members. And, you know, it was like this first time in my life that I'd had a regular, you know, big job for, you know, several months. It was like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 months that I was like solidly working. And, you know, we thought this is it. And then it didn't. So then you go back and you're like, what's next? And then, you know, something like, you know, any of my viral videos, like those are things I just made for fun with friends. And some of those have taken off. And so, you know, the lesson that I took away was just love what you do, because you have no control over what job is going to make you the thing. It's like you look at all the cast members of Friends. It's like all of those people had so many shows before that either didn't go or people don't remember or whatever. And then they get Friends and it's like these six unknown kids, you know, it's like, no. Those six people were working so hard, you know, leading up to that moment. And so, you know, you just have to enjoy it. And cause yeah, nobody knows what's going to be the hit.
Actor, comedian, Drew Droege, once again, is the voice that you're hearing, Frank McKay here. If you've stepped away, let me remind everyone, you're listening to Breaking It Down, Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, Drew Droege is our very special guest, and you know his work. I don't even know where to start where you know his work from. He's got a ton of work. Drunk History is something that you've got to watch him in. He plays a lot of roles, but, you know, he hosts one, well, whatever they call it. He's the narrator for one. Just an amazing career that he is putting together here. Frank McKay here with Drew Droege. Let me go back to a couple of things you said. First of all, you know, you've mentioned a few times, like oh, you watched that and you thought to yourself, oh, my God, that's gross, or what they're doing. You've obviously, like, polished yourself up. You know, like all professionals do, you know, over a course of time. And it's, I guess, trial and error, making this mistake or doing this and watching somebody and realizing that this isn't happening. Is there anybody who took you under their wing originally, any kind of mentor that you could point to who said to you, hey, come here a second. Let me save you a lot of time. Do this. Was there anybody nurturing in your life, or was it all, you know, every man for himself, every man?
Oh,
woman?
No, it was a little bit of both, because I feel like, you know, I think I just heard somebody say something. Somebody just got, I don't remember who it was, but they were, and they said, God, I would love a manual. They were on an interview and they said, I wish there was just a manual for, like, when, you know, how to do this, how to handle your fans and how to handle the attention and the schedule and how to handle all this money all of a sudden, and all this stuff. And, you know, and it's like, the reality is, it's like everyone does it differently and you have to learn how to navigate that kind of on your own. I mean, I think about, like, I mean, I had so many great teachers at the Groundlings. One of whom in particular was Patrick Bristow, who's just this consummate character actor who, you know, you might know from Ellen. He was on the Ellen TV show, and he's been in a million movies. And he, you know, he was someone who really saw me at an early age and did take me aside and did tell me to keep going and to create my own work and to get it out there. And he also told me that, like, he said something, and I know he said this to a million people, but he said, you know, casting, it's like people are going to the grocery store and it's like, you know, you need detergent and you just think, oh, I just need some detergent. And you just look right ahead and you see, you know, Dawn or All or whatever you see right in front of you and you just grab detergent and move on. It was like, there's a whole row of, you know, there's a whole aisle of detergent that it could be. And he's like, you just want to stay right at eye level with a lot of people. You know, you want to stay in the, you know, and the way to do that is just keep making things and keep, you know, because you can't control, you know, your show being a hit, or like, you know, you can't control anything, but you can control how much content you're putting out there. And you can, and now that we have the internet, you can just keep making videos. And I do a lot of, you know, live theater that I create, one man shows that I've created for myself. And just, it you know, and he's like, just keep making things and stay in front of people. And that was incredible advice, you know.
You know, early on in your life, was there anything that pointed to this? I mean, who did it for you on TV or in the movies? How early on did you say, you know what?
When I was like 3 years old, I never wanted to watch cartoons. I only wanted to watch Carol Burnett. That was the thing that I had to watch all the time. And my mom would tell me that, like, I would double over laughing. She's like, you got, and I mean, I would argue that Carol Burnett is, you know, she makes anyone laugh. It's just pure comedy. So, like, you don't have to really know what's happening in the scene. You can be really young or sort of not even paying attention, but you're so connected to that performer. And, you know, and so everything I feel like that I do is I've learned from Carol Burnett. I mean, totally. And then, yeah, as I got older, I watched a lot of Saturday Night Live and I watched Kids in the Hall and In Living Color, and I loved that, the format of of sketch comedy and the characters that came out of that. And that sort of that energy, that sort of that live, almost musical theater and comedy smash up energy that's on those shows. And I kind of always wanted to do that, but you know, you just don't ever think you're going to be doing it. And I went back to my college and taught a class, and there was this girl that came up to me and she was like, oh God, to be doing what you're doing. And of course I'm never going to do that. And I was like, why not? And she's like, well, how would I? I mean, that's ridiculous. And I was like, you know, I was right where you were, you know, years ago, but you know, and you know, so when you're in the middle of it, it is kind of awesome to look back and say, yeah, I guess I've been wanting and aiming to do this all my life. And so it feels, you know, great to be able to get to do it.
Drew Droege, once again, is the voice that you're hearing. Just Google him. His work is unbelievable. Google him and check out his internet work, too. He's a terrific content creator, but a wonderful actor, comedian, writer. Drew Droege, Frank McKay here with Drew. You mentioned the Groundlings a couple of times, and you know, you mentioned early on watching Saturday Night Live. When you got involved with the Groundlings, is the natural tendency for the folks there thinking, hey, you know, maybe I'm going to try out for Saturday Night Live? Is that in the back of a lot of the improvers, minds? Is Saturday Night Live the mecca? I mean, is that?
Oh, it totally is. And anybody who tells you otherwise is lying, because, I mean, it really is. It's Oz, you know. And I think that, you know, the greatest thing for me is, well, I mean, I did get to audition for Saturday Night Live many years ago, it was truly the most incredible, terrifying thing I've done as a performer. It was getting up there and standing on that stage, the show that I've watched all my life, in front of those people, and just putting up a couple bits and you know and trying for a spot on the show. It's something that when I teach at the Groundlings, I have to constantly get it out of students' minds, because they come there on the first day thinking, how is this going to get on SNL? How am I going to get on that show? And they think of that show a lot, and to an unhealthy degree, it gives that show too much power. I mean, with all, you know, due respect, it's incredible, but it's also a show. It's a job.
Right.
And, you know, I learned from that in that lesson that they came to the theater and for whatever reason picked me up to go and you know, try out for a spot. And they were really nice. I mean, they put you in a really high stakes situation. They isolate you. They keep you for hours. They throw you out on stage. They want you to really have the experience of being on live TV and seeing how you're going to be able to handle it. And I was really young, and who knows, you know, how it went. I mean, it was such an out of body experience, but it was also a lesson that, like, every year when they would come back around, they were looking for other people. And so it took a couple years I've gone to the show many times to see friends who are cast members and writers and whatever. And it was really nice on about the third or fourth time when I was in the writer's room and then right before a show started. And I could look around and I could be so happy for it happening and so happy to be there and have no desire to be on it anymore. And that's a big sort of rite of passage, I think, as a sketch comedian, to go, oh, this is great. I would do this tomorrow if they called me to come be on it. Of course I would. But I'm also like, you sort of make peace with the fact that, like, you know, don't kill yourself just getting there, because especially once they've seen you. You know, and then they make other decisions, and you sort of, and you know, and you move on, and you're able to sort of, like, there's very much a growing up process of just realizing, like, coming to terms with, like, all right, I'm not gonna be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. That's okay. I'm still doing this, and I'm doing it on my own terms.
You're listening to the voice of Drew Droege, just a wonderfully talented guy, and I'm thrilled to have him here, Frank McKay, with actor, comedian, writer. We got a couple moments left with Drew, but just he has put together an amazing career. It's still going strong, and it's yet to even hit its peak. And if you look at his resume, it is a mile long. I mean, he is terrific. And then there's things that you can't put on IMDb, the live performances. You know, you can't put that on. It's just, you could imagine what this guy's workload has been over the years. Just terrific. One quick point about Saturday Night Live. They've launched a lot of careers, but they've also passed on more great talent than,
sure,
than they've created. And the thing is, I think maybe somebody would go in there, you know, guy or girl would go in and even bomb and think, oh God, I'm not good enough for Saturday Night Live. No, you just might not be what they're looking for. Maybe they already have a fat guy, or maybe they already have,
right,
a Hispanic guy or an African American woman or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have that type of dynamic, and they don't pick, but they're not batting 1,000 either.
Right.
You know.
Right, and it's a good lesson in how the industry works, is that sometimes you're going to get the job, and more often you're not, like across the board. And you do need to be in it, and you have really no control out of being that thing that they need in that moment, you know? And I've also seen people go in for that show, and if they are what they're looking for, they might have in their mind a really rough or, you know, not good audition, and they'll work with them, and they sometimes still get the job because they're what the show needs. And that's not only SNL, but that's in general. And I've sort of been marveled, because, you know, you walk in and you go, okay, this is what we want. They're a little rough, but we can work with this, versus, you know, so it's a good lesson, because you can go in there and give the most incredible audition of your life, and if you're not what they're looking for, you're not going to get the job. And that's frustrating to, you know, feel at first, to be like, but I did amazing work. It's like, no one would deny that. Everyone in the room would say that was incredible, but it's not what we want. So, you know, it's that, you know, it's a good lesson to, you know, realize it's not about like really how well you do in that audition. It's about you kind of coming in and being what they need for the job. So, you know, the one thing you can control is just being good and being committed every time you go in there, every time you go in for a job, do the best you that you can do. And sometimes you'll get it, and often you won't, and then you move on.
Let me preface this by saying I'm not talking about being naive and walking up to Kevin Costner and kind of having that kind of confidence. But
right,
there's a moment where everybody kind of finds their confidence, and it's either a moment or a couple of moments or a stretch of time. Do you remember when you found your confidence and when it all changed for you and it kind of all clicked? Was it a moment? Was it a process? Has it always been there?
It really, for me, I think a lot of it came from performing live a lot. I would say I definitely, the first thing that popped in my mind is, you know, I went through the Groundlings, and I lived and died by what you go through a thing called the Sunday Company, and you, every week you're creating new material, and the main company comes and watches the show, and they, you know, they vote after 6 months whether you can stay in the Sunday Company. And then after a year and a half in the Sunday Company, if you make it 3 terms, they vote whether you get into the main company. So I lived and died by these people's opinion, and I would hear like who was in the audience that night. And, you know, and then I, after 3 terms, I did not get into the main company at the time. And about a month later, I was called back to the Groundlings to do a show. And I realized then for the first time I could perform on that stage and not care what anybody thought. And I could just do what I do. And I've never had a better show. And I think I became so much better overnight once I stopped caring who was out there watching me, how it was going to go, what they thought of me, all this stuff that I can't control. And I realized like, oh, I'm still here, because I don't know what I was afraid of. Like, if I don't get in the main company, I'm just going to disappear. And that didn't happen. In fact, it made me create my own material. It made me go to other theaters. It made me work outside of that. And I got to know so many other people. And I sort of would walk in and realize that like, oh, all that training, all that, you know, all those nerves and all that stuff really pays off, because you can walk in now with confidence and say, this is what I do. It's a profession like anything else. And then I think it's also just years of doing it. You know, at a certain point, you just have to realize like, yeah, I just hit my 20-year anniversary of living in LA. Like, you know, so there's confidence that comes from that too.
You know, there's a little book that could probably be read in 2 hours. It's called the 7 Spiritual Laws of Success, Deepak Chopra. And
oh, sure.
He has one of his laws, one of those 7 laws is the law of detachment. And he talks about that same thing, you know, like when you're trying,
yes,
so hard to do something, then when you give it up, it's a perfect, what you just said is a perfect example. I'll give you one quick weird example, but I knew a girl growing up, and she was adopted as a 2-year-old, and her parents mm-hmm. were trying for years and years and years to have kids, and they just couldn't do it, and they couldn't figure out why. They went for all kinds mm-hmm. of testing. They adopt her. She's 2-year-old baby, and 2 weeks later, they get pregnant. Then after that, they have six kids.
Of course.
They get six kids what? After that. You know, like something happened, sure. you know, where all the pressure was off. And it was like, and I think that's the Lord's attachment. And it's kind of like what you're talking about there. Again, Drew Droege is our very special guest. And give us a website or a social media site where people can kind of follow along with what you're doing.
Sure. I have a website. It's drewdroege.com. And I'm on Instagram with Drew_Droege. Also on Twitter at Drew Droege.
Yeah. It's just, when I ask you for websites, I imagine there's a whole bunch of different websites that people, you know, like when I Google you, that lots of things come up and, all types of folks come up. Are there haters out there? Do you have your folks?
Oh, sure. Oh, of course. And, you realize that, like, you know, when something – that's when you know something is a hit, when you start having, naysayers coming out and saying, oh, this is terrible, this is boring, I hate this. I always think if people take the time to write something, then they are engaged in some level. And, I've been lucky. I haven't had to deal with so much of that because I'm still – I think I'm still at a level where people know who I am. It's because they like what I do. It's like, when someone gets like household name, that's when they really have to deal with like, okay, I'm going to go off Twitter for a minute because, people are vicious and a lot of it's kids. A lot of people just want attention or they're trying to be funny. I mean, the hardest thing is like when you do a lot of funny stuff, people try to be funny with you and they've never met you and they don't know how something's going to sound because people, can write really, really snarky things on my wall. I think they think I'm going to laugh and think like, oh, you're like me. We're both, and instead I'm like, oh, ow, that hurt. That wasn't nice. But you can't take it deeper than that. Cause a lot of people would be mortified if they knew like what they said would like, put you off in any bad way. And then there are people who just want to, bring you down. And then you just have to, ignore it. And,
if you not to cut you off, but if you think about it, you probably get 1,000, positive comments for every guy that says, I hope you ride into a tree and kill yourself.
Right, exactly.
And the thing is, most comedians, by the way, stand-ups, I think are the most vulnerable to things.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And oh, sure.
They're so sensitive about it. And, I've said to some, pretty famous people, like, just friends that, and I'd say, listen, that's one idiot, right? That's one idiot. And he'd be popping champagne if he realized he got to you like this. How about the 1,000 people that said you were great? This guy's an idiot. He's a keyboard.
It's horrible. It's the worst. Cause like the one bad comment can stay with you. The one weird, after you do a show, you can have all these people come up to you and say all these great things. And you can have one person who has their arms folded, who's like glaring at you, that I can focus on the rest of the night. And I have to consciously be like, just throw it away. Don't give that any energy. But I think it comes from this need of just like, you want people to like you and you want to connect and have that sort of moment. And when you find someone that's like, really upset, I think a lot of comedians, a lot of stand-ups, they really love bombing sometimes because it teaches them a lot and they love that sort of, they sort of chase that. I mean, I'm way more an actor in the sense that I need love and validation way too much. But, it's rough and it's definitely something you have to deal with and also not take your good press too much to heart either. And just sort of like, keep your head down, keep doing it,
We have about 3 minutes left with Drew Droege. I appreciate your time here, Drew. Wonderful comedian and actor, content creator. But one of the things, and I'll be open about saying this, but there's a guy named Jamie Kennedy, and I don't know much about his work at all. But he did a piece. He created a documentary called Heckler. And
I heard about this. I haven't seen it, but I've guessed. Totally.
I met the guy one time at a party, And I said to him, I said, yeah, you know, all kidding aside, that's an important piece. And he really talks about criticism and people dealing with criticism. And he got into, like, who these keyboard commandos were in the basement of their parents' house.
And
like, if I was his friend, if I was his agent, if I was something, I'd say, you know, you could really, like make a mark by promoting this, or, you know, redoing, maybe cut out some of the, you know, some of the things. But it's an important piece on the criticism that guys like you, guys that are getting a lot of attention in the business, are getting. But, you know, just little bits of criticism from hecklers and everything else. I really thought it was an important piece. And I don't know much of his work. I'm not criticizing or disparaging him. I don't know much of his work. And but that I thought was terrific, and I thought it was important. And we got about a minute and a half left. And anything you want to share that we haven't touched on? Anything you want to plug?
Well, I know that that this is pre-recorded, and I'm not sure when people are going to see it. But if anyone hearing this is in New York, I'm doing my new solo show at the Soho Playhouse, opening in February. I'm not sure how long we're going to run. Hopefully we'll run for quite a while. So that's going to be, I'm playing 9 different characters in that, and I'm workshopping it in LA this fall. So I actually, tomorrow I go up and do it in LA, for a bit, and then I know we won't hear this in that amount of time, but like, if you're in New York in February, come check it out at the Soho Playhouse. It's called Happy Birthday, Doug is the name of the show. And then, I mean, I'm, you know, popping up in little stuff here and there, you know, so.
How about the website one more time?
The website is drewdrogi.com, or you can follow me on Instagram, drew_drogi, or at Twitter, just @drewdrogi.
Well, listen, when we get closer to the time, maybe I can get you on again and we could just talk about the show.
I would love that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and just concentrate heavily on that. I mean, it's terrific. I'll be there, and I'm going to urge everyone else.
Oh, great. Oh, thanks.
And yeah, and Drew Drogi has been our very special guest. Again, a wonderful actor, comedian, writer, and you know, you can see his play in February, his show. Frank McKay here with him. Listen, first of all, congratulations on an amazing career, and it's still going strong, and thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Frank. This was so fun.
Yeah, well, thrilled to have you. Again, Drew Drogi, everyone, has been our very special guest. Google him. You will see his resume is a mile long. His work is excellent. I mean, he's just a terrifically talented guy and versatile and just absolutely terrific. Drew Drogi, once again, is our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.